This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is sponsored by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial by going to audiblepodcast.com/missspots. Choose from over 150,000 titles that can be downloaded to your computer, iPhone, Android phone, or any other audio device. Get Terry Funk, More Than Just Hardcore, Dusty, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream, or many other options. It can be yours for free by going to audiblepodcast.com/missspots. Thanks. Now enjoy the show.
Time to play the game!
Welcome, everybody, to another new episode of the Missed Spots podcast. I'm Mike.
I'm Kevin.
And we are here on Monday the 24th, right after, the day after, Survivor Series before Raw is going to hit air. Before we get into the whole recap of the pay-per-view that was, what do you think of the show overall?
Looking at the show beforehand, I was really afraid it was going to be a very underwhelming show because the card was weak, right? We had a Divas title match that was just, it was a thrown together. They're dressing up as each other. The bunch of crazy broads like it has been for however long. The female classic Survivor Series match was completely thrown together, tossed together with absolutely no build up to it. Why don't these people like each other other than Paige and Alicia Fox, which kind of silly. Even the four-way tag team match, while involving a bunch of entertaining people, did not have really a lot behind it other than they were in a match against each other. So
there were only five matches announced for the pay-per-view.
Exactly. Other than Bray and Ambrose and the main event, it was a very, very underwhelming card. That taken into account, when you add everything up together, I thought it was a pretty decent show, but it's because the high spots were high. I really like the way that the main event played out. Love seeing Sting debut, which was huge. Mm-hmm. The Wyatt and Ambrose match was basically just a commercial for TLC, which I thought that was a little disappointing.
Well, the aftermath
me.
Was.
But I just feel like that entire thing was just building up to TLC.
Yeah.
Just the way they played it out. It was an entertaining match. It was good to see those guys go at it without gimmicks involved.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people wanted
just
to see
a good brawler.
But I know a lot of people wanted to see gimmicks involved because all the head games, but they got that for next month. So that was definitely a high point as far as action for me. It was a good show. It didn't, even with the poor card, the setup for it, it never really got bad. The Divas elimination match had some missed spots and looked a little silly here or there. The Bella, Nikki Bella versus AJ match was 22 seconds long. 35 seconds long. So they got that one over with quick. And, you know, we did have a match with a bunny. So there was that.
Indeed we did.
Yeah, we did.
We had two pre-show matches as well.
Uh-huh.
We had the return of Fandango with his new attitude, his new demeanor.
His new outfit.
Yeah, new outfit, new entrance music that the fans can't sing along to anymore. And new dance partner, Rosa Mendez.
Yeah.
And he took on Justin Gabriel, won in about 3 minutes. It was what it was.
He's a pretty good worker in the ring. He's got a great look to him. But this was like the re-debut of Fandango, right?
Yeah.
And so the re-debut of Fandango is Fandango.
Yeah.
He has slightly different ring attire and dances to a different music.
Yeah. Still dances, still does the top rope leg drop as his finishing move.
So I'm not really sure what the repackaging is there with him or why they... It wasn't working before that, and the creative didn't seem to have anything for him, so they take him off TV for a while and then make him the same exact character.
Kind of like Kane with or without the mask.
So who knows where they're going with that. But he's a talented guy. I just thought maybe they would keep the name, keep who he was, but hold back some of the dancing, some of the more ridiculous aspects of him and make him more of a serious competitor. Doesn't seem like they're doing that.
No. We got a promo from Bad News Barrett. Came out and delivered two big pieces of bad news that JBL popped huge for.
He said it! He said it, Michael!
He did it again!
He's got some bad news for us! I knew it!
Being very face with his promo, he was very anti-authority, and it seemed like he was looking forward to the authority being out of power.
Yeah, we got to see where it goes with that. He's such a natural heel, and really should be. But the fact was, he was getting very good crowd reactions before.
People were loving him as a heel,
right?
Being how good of a heel he was.
And I think they've seen how hard that can be with Bray. So maybe they just realize, hey, this guy's got to be a face. Mm-hmm. He can be that kind of tweener, but still a baby face. He can still have that attitude. He can be a stone cold kind of baby face. Hopefully, he's going to be there tonight. Hopefully, that means he's back.
Yeah, because I would love that.
He's will be a high spot. I said to you on the broadcast, he's one of the best talkers in the entire company. And right now, we kind of need more talk. See, I don't mind the backstage segments when they're done well with people who can talk. And too often we have Kane, we have the Bellas, we have Adam Rose, we have people who we don't really want to hear talk that aren't entertaining, carrying those segments. But if you can put someone like Bad News Barrett in there, that becomes entertaining. It becomes a nice complement to the in-ring action.
I agree. Mystery second match of the pre-show. Cesaro comes out and voices his support for the authority, leading to Swagger and Zeb coming out and voicing their support for Team Cena. Swagger was forced out of the main event because of an injury. But he can't compete.
He was injured, so he couldn't compete for Team Cena, yet he could wrestle on main event and the pre-show to the pay-per-view.
Yes.
That's pretty stupid booking. I mean, it really was. That's bad.
Yeah. They put on a fine little match for 5 minutes that they were given. Got stuff in pretty quick. Cesaro doing great selling of getting stuck in the Patriot Lock early on.
He sold that ankle the entire match. Everything he was doing, even when he was doing his suplexes, he'd stop, shake the foot out for a second, and then go into the suplex, which is so important and so underrated in wrestling nowadays, is a guy selling properly through a match. You see it with Ziggler, you see it with Cesaro. The great ones, the best ones, the ones that really draw you in, do that.
Yeah. And he...
Lost,
yeah.
To Swagger.
Yeah. But good little match. Wish, we've been talking about with Cesaro. We wish that he would get some W's, but it's still great that he is on TV and putting on great performances.
He's still there to entertain the crowd, and he does a great job, and people are still behind him. Whenever they want to pull the trigger with that guy, I feel like they can. So yeah. we at least have that as fans of Cesaro.
Absolutely. The pay-per-view started with a promo. Lasted about 18 minutes.
Which I will say, I've read some stuff online like, oh, it's just another episode of Raw. We have seen little to no promo action on pay-per-views as of late. And I've been waiting for that. A good promo sets the table for a show or adds to the story. And with Vince McMahon around, and I think Triple H and Stephanie both are a great promo, I think that it can add to the storyline in a good way. You might disagree with me. I know a lot of people online disagree with that. But I had no issue with them starting off with Vince and them in the ring and still kind of driving that point home of how important this was. It didn't bother me at all.
I don't think it needed to be as long as it was.
Possibly.
And the whole rest of the show had so much filler in it. Like, this reminded me of Raw.
Well, with five matches,
yeah.
With five matches, they had to have filler. I'm not saying that they used their time as efficiently as they could have. I don't think they did, and I think that was one of the major negatives of the pay per view. But for what they had booked, I would have liked to see two extra matches. Hell, bring in the NXT guys and have them open the show with Sami Zayn and Tyson Kidd or something. You know, that would have been something, but. That's not how they booked it. So they needed the talking segment. They needed to book a match on the fly, an unadvertised match, just to fill the time out.
Yeah. The first match that we got was the Fatal 4-Way for the WWE Tag Team Championships. I didn't even realize until you pointed it out during the match that this wasn't an elimination match.
Right. And
I'm like, why are these guys breaking up? Counts. They want to get someone eliminated, but you point out it's one fall. So, being Survivor Series, you thought that the elimination style would fit in there a little better.
It seems like it's a no-brainer to do that, and you can kill some more time that way too. It felt weird that they didn't do it that way.
Miz and Damian Mizdow won the titles.
How over is Mizdow right now?
So incredibly over.
I mean when it wasn't just even the Miz, it was Stardust would point at Mizdow and the crowd loses their damn minds, and then, you know, no, we're not going to do that, and the boos ring down. And then after the match, when they have finally won, and they did it like two or three times for
the
long
boo.
Periods.
Yeah.
Where Miz raises his arm, boo. Mizdow raises his arm, yay. It was really cool.
A couple really great moments from this match. I think Miz took a superplex and Mizdow slingshotted. I don't know what the proper past tense of that is.
himself into
the ring and took a back bump for his way of reenacting that.
And selling that move, yeah.
Then after the match, when Miz took both the belts, and Mizdow went to the ref and grabbed nothing from him and started celebrating like he had both belts too. He is so fucking good and so fucking over right now. But like I said last night, I don't know how you can turn this into a successful singles run for him. I don't know. So I don't know how the WWE would do it.
The only thing I can think of is that obviously the mimicry thing has to go away. Yeah, he has to become his own man.
Mm-hmm.
But his comic timing and his mic work are solid. His comic timing is phenomenal. One of the better guys has ever done it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can put him in a role as a babyface where he can use his promo to cut into heels in a somewhat humorous way. Not the badass humorous way like The Rock, but into a humorous way, and use facial expressions and things to convey things to the audience while still being taken seriously as a real competitor, not a joke competitor. That's the real problem. You don't want to transition him and he's just the comic babyface forever.
Santino.
Yeah, because that doesn't help anybody out. And this will have to run its course. He can't just go and then mimic somebody else. So hopefully they can transition him and set him down a path, because he's a talented in-ring worker. He can talk. He's obviously willing to do anything and put his heart into it. And you really hope they reward him with something good, and that the crowd will stay with him, knowing that he took shit. He took a shitty gimmick. He took so much. I mean, dressing up as Bret the Hitman Hart and Vince McMahon and
LeBron James,
and all this awful stuff they had him doing on a regular basis, and he turned it into something special and funny and entertaining. And I would hate to see that all go away.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guy deserves it. He doesn't deserve a world title win, but he deserves to be on around the U.S. and Intercontinental Championship.
Was he the first? No, he was the second person to ever not successfully cash in the Money in the Bank
right
contract.
Other than that, I mean, the Los Matadores, they were there.
Yeah.
So that was a thing. Golden Stardust, you think, would probably still stay being booked strong. Who they're going to feud with, since they're a heel tag team, and so are Miz and Sandow. The Usos are the obvious choice to feud with them, with the tag team champions. So you think that's going to happen?
I honestly have no idea where they're going with the tag team division, unless they're just going to not really focus on a feud for them, but maybe start building up the internal conflict between Miz and Mizdow.
But in order to do that, they have to go to the ring and fight somebody.
Yeah, they might just put them in random matches,
right,
but not have the focus be on who their opponents are, but on the two of them.
But you've got to get the Usos and Golden Stardust something to do.
Yeah,
because the Usos were are a very talented tag team and were the anchor of that division for a while, mm-hmm. and Golden Stardust have gotten over, so to not have them being featured on TV would be a shame, and would be losing the momentum that they have. They're not doing enough with tag teams nowadays.
No, not at all.
In general, you should you can have right now. Unless you're feuding for the titles, you're not really around or being featured on TV. It used to be where you'd have the tag teams that were feuding for the titles, and you also had the lesser tag teams feuding with each other, just like you have every other wrestler on the roster. So, you know, we still have the Lucha Dragons down in NXT. We still have Ascension. We have the Vaudevillains. So there's a lot of tag teams waiting in the wings.
You have the New Day coming soon.
Absolutely, yeah. That's another thing. So we don't even know how they're going to debut.
Yeah. Are they faces? Are they heels?
What their gimmick is. It seems babyface, yeah, but you never know how it's actually going to come out in the wash.
Yeah.
Maybe they walk on there and they start feuding with Golden Stardust.
Maybe, yeah. Divas Survivor Series elimination match had Team Fox, Alicia Fox, Emma, Naomi, and Natalya with KKK Tyson Kidd, or Tyson KK Kidd. That hood's got to go, bro.
Yeah,
fact.
Just make sure you kind of explain that, because it would sound weird for someone who didn't see
the hood on his jacket was white. It is pointy. And it was over most of his face.
Right.
He should have had someone tell him not to do that. he was tweeting out pictures of himself all during the match.
Was he really?
Yeah, at ringside, taking pictures. Taking on Team Paige, that was Paige, Cameron, and did not know that this was their team name, the Slayers, Layla and Summer Rae. Were you aware of that being their tag team name?
I was not.
Team Fox won with a clean sweep. They eliminated all four and didn't lose a single one of their team members. Man, Paige is just falling off the page.
So much potential. And, I mean, she was the last survivor for her team. She's obviously still a very talented individual and has a lot to offer the company, but it's the same thing as with the tag teams. If you're not feuding for the title, there's nothing for you to do if you're a woman in the WWE. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, look at Natalya.
Unless you're on Total Divas,
right,
which Paige is supposed to be on the next season.
Oh, yeah. But even reading. Then, I mean, the feuds are so mediocre and such an afterthought. It's just like, we have an extra segment of Raw, throw them out there and have them fight,
yeah,
over a picture.
And there is the talent there. Emma, Naomi, Natalya, Paige, even Layla are all pretty good workers to very good workers. And it's a shame that they got to just be in this and deal with the ones who aren't very good workers.
I think the best thing to say about that match is that it happened.
Yes.
And that was about it.
After that, we had Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose going at it. Nice little brawl that went on there. And it was a finish with Bray winning by DQ, with kind of just asking Dean to hit him with a chair. And Dean more than obliged.
Well, this is a thing that Bray's done. He did it all through the Cena feud, and it's kind of the thing where he makes himself a martyr, which is a good thing for him. doing that to Dean Ambrose, you know that Dean's going to hit him with a chair because he's the lunatic fringe. So it was kind of a strange way to play that out. But it, in order to do this feud over several months, you know, someone had to – no one was going to go over clean this first match. I think we have that kind of in our back of our pockets, right, where if Bray was going to win, it was going to be doing something nefarious, something off the book. But Dean or Bray were not going to go over clean with this one. When I say that it was just a prelude to the tables, ladders, and chairs, with Dean just getting the ladder out and then going and standing on it seemed – I mean, it was like, look, we're going to do this next month. I thought he was going to do a move off of the ladder, which would have made a little more sense.
Maybe even Dean was like, hey, you know what? The next pay-per-view is TLC. Maybe I should pull this ladder out.
Well, it's almost like – I really want the crowd to cheer for me, but maybe not enough of them can see me off the top rope, so I'm going to get this ladder out and get slightly higher. That was a little silly. The match in general was good. It was not the show-stealing kind of match that we think that they can put on, but it was a very good match, technically the best match of the night, and it was entertaining. I think these guys still have a lot to give. I hope that this... I mean, Bray stopped to give a promo in the middle of the match, which that was...
At the end of the match.
But that was before...
It wasn't in the middle of the match.
Jesus Christ. Before the conclusion of the match, during the match, Bray Wyatt promo. You cocksucker. Gave a promo, which is kind of a bizarre thing. We don't see that very often. I hope they can go a little bit different than just the... Your dad was a drug addict or alcoholic, and your mother didn't love you. That seems...
And he should go, your dad was a tax collector.
Your brother's a bad motivational speaker. So I still think there's a lot for this feud to give us as far as entertainment value, but it hasn't really got it yet.
It's still 1 month old. They had a little bit of build in the weeks leading up to this. This was their first match. I think they got some time. We said the same thing about Jericho's feud and Cena's feud with Bray as well, and those didn't go exactly as planned. But we still have the benefit of the doubt here.
Absolutely. Two talented guys.
Yeah.
This TLC thing, I think they're going to knock it out the park with the next match. There's going to be a lot of brutality. I think it'll be great.
Yeah, as long as Dean's not doing silly things like
beating up a mannequin,
a taco truck, or jumping out of
we don't need to see that.
Boxes. Then we had the impromptu match: Adam Rose and the Bunny taking on Slater Gator. This occurred because Slater Gator interrupted Adam Rose and the Bunny while playing with their figures, and led to a match.
Listen, I would fuck you up if you started cheated to win a match with me with my my wrestling figurines. I can completely understand that.
Then the Bunny stole the win while Adam Rose just stood on the apron holding his hand out for a tag, and Bunny took the dive into the what express are they? The
Exotic
Express, and they paraded the Bunny out, leaving Adam just to his own thoughts, which probably aren't good thoughts.
Can I go for my problem with this feud is a lack of logic. Not because there's a man in a bunny costume fighting a man who calls people lemons and rosebuds, but quite honestly, like the last 2 weeks for SmackDown and Raw, at the end of every time that you see the Bunny and Adam Rose kicks the shit out of the Bunny, but yet they still keep tagging together. Like he's giving him
his
finishing move, and then it's like, oh, we're going to wrestle together again. That just seems kind of dumb.
Well, they played that up, I guess, maybe a little bit during the backstage segment where he's like, I made you who you were. If it weren't for me, you'd be doing birthday parties still. Nice accent.
That's good, man. That's very good. You should be his stunt double.
But I guess what they're playing up here is that the bunny owes part of his lifestyle to Adam Rose, so he just keeps on going back to him, kind of like domestic.
Like Ike and Tina Turner?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was a match that was what it was. This just seemed to happen most of the card. Then we went to the Divas Championship match. AJ defending against Nikki. 35-second match that involved Brie kissing AJ, AJ getting rack attacked, and Nikki Bella's your new Divas Champion, with Brie looking quite proud of her, either quite proud of herself that she helped her sister, or very much enjoying the kiss.
Puzzling, one way to put the way this match went down. AJ is one of the most talented female wrestlers that you could book to wrestle a match. The best talker of anyone in the Divas division. We've heard the rumors that maybe she's done with the company, and she has rebranded herself as AJ Brooks, and there's a possibility she could just be done. She's apparently not kind of a loner in the locker room, and obviously with her husband being kind of public enemy number one to a certain extent, and the WWE universe or the inside politics of the locker room, maybe she's done. Then a bunch of people came out online and said that there's no credible rumors that this, or no credible sources say this is actually true, and then we see her get blown out in 32 seconds.
I guess we'll see if she's actually on the show tonight.
Obviously, we'll see. But what I'm seeing is Nikki versus Brie. Brie wanted Nikki to have the title. She has one more day tomorrow before the her 30 days of being her whatever her personal assistant are up. So she was happy to put the belt on her, and then she's going to go after Nikki. That would be my assumption. But maybe they'll make them a tag team of sorts together and have them run roughshod over the Divas division.
Maybe.
But it was a bizarre.
Then they got to bring Karma back to destroy the Bellas.
But in a 3-hour show with 5 matches booked beforehand to have a 32-second match, strange booking, I think you would say. So there's got to be a reason why they buried her in 30-some seconds.
You would think, but stranger things have happened in the WWE.
Yeah, good point.
Then we have our main event, the 5-on-5 Survivor Series Elimination Tag Match Team Authority against Team Cena, where if Team Cena wins, the Authority are out of power. If Team Authority wins, every member of Team Cena except for Cena would be fired. John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Big Show, Eric Rowan, and Ryback against Seth Rollins, Kane, Mark Henry, Rusev, and the new Intercontinental Champion Luke Harper. 43 minutes this match went. Pretty, pretty long for WWE standards.
Right.
And probably the match of the night.
I loved how this match was booked.
Yeah.
It
didn't go any way that any of us really thought, except for a couple little things.
Well, I called the first elimination.
Yeah.
that Mark Henry was just going to run into a knockout punch and just be eliminated immediately. But no, I thought the Big Show would be eliminated early on, him or Rowan, because you know they had less of a standing on the tier of people on the team. I had a feeling that Henry would get eliminated early, but I love the way they booked this match. We saw the Rusev thing coming with a DQ or a countout that we saw because no one's gonna let them pin him, but Cena getting eliminated early was wonderful. Having Ziggler be the one to eliminate 3 people to give the win to his team is a breath of fresh air, as much as we love Dolph Ziggler. He's been thrust into a main event spotlight. The fans have reacted well to him. They pulled the IC title off him to give it to Luke Harper. And,
they had Luke Harper look good. The last 3, Harper, Rollins, and Ziggler.
Which is a great trio of people to be around that, that tier. You know, Orton was not there. Obviously, Kane was gone by then. Cena was gone by then. They did a good job of making people look good.
That's saying a lot to put those three younger guys at the end of arguably maybe your second biggest pay-per-view of the year.
And quite honestly, if you really want to look at it, the biggest pay-per-view of the year, because they gave it away free.
Yeah.
And they're trying to entice. I mean, I'm not trying to say it's bigger than WrestleMania as far as its stature, but as far as what it needed to do, that was huge. Yeah. They were giving us. They didn't lean on Cena there. They leaned on the younger guys, and hopefully they're rewarded for it because I want to see more of that.
I agree. But
pretty well worked match. Overall, booked interestingly. We thought we might see one turncoat in there. Big Show punching out Cena and then basically eliminating himself by getting counted out. That I was shocked to see. I didn't think that was going to happen. I thought it would be Rowan or something like that. Really, really well done. It got long in the end because they had to have the Sting debut, which I guess we talk about now. So, you know, there's a long stare down with him in Triple H. So guys are selling their respective finishing moves for a long time in order to make that work. So it got a little stale there. It got a little stale there, but it was also, we saw Sting in a WWE ring staring down Triple H.
It's been, what, 15 years in the making? I think that's been how long WCW's been out of business?
13.
Close to 15. I'm rounding.
Listen, you're going to fucking call me out on my grammar and things earlier on. Cocksucker.
Of course, Sting doesn't look as good as he did when he was younger, but still, it's Sting.
He's a 50-something-year-old man, yeah. He didn't look great, and they're going to have to do everything in their power to make him look as young as possible for this going forward. But it's still Sting. The aura is there of who he is and what he represents from WCW and his character. And what do you think about him in Triple H? WrestleMania, right? That's what we're looking at.
Yeah, the rumors going into this was that it might play off into just a debut of Sting, not getting involved in a match, but just having him come out and be introduced and then leading it up to an Undertaker match.
Right.
But now it looks like they pulled a fast one. Maybe they thought people found out about that and Randy being there and, like, we're going to swerve them and put Sting in the main event and have him end up working a program with Triple H.
Triple H is still young enough, even though he's not a full-time guy. We saw it earlier this year when he put on a great show with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. He's done good ring work when they put together Evolution against the Shield. So if you put Taker and Sting in a match at this point, it's more than likely going to be below expectations. Mm-hmm. They're old guys. Neither one is going to carry the other. It would be the aura would be amazing around it. The hype around it would be great, but I don't think it would deliver in the ring. But when you got a guy like Triple H, whether you like him or hate him, he can still go. He's a ring general. He knows what to do in the ring, and maybe we can see something in the neighborhood of Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair. Right, whether you have the guy that is limited at this point, but he can be carried to a great match by someone who knows how to do so and still can physically do it. Mm. So hopefully that's what we'll get a chance to see. And we feel like it's going that way, but we don't know. But now with Triple H not being the authority, not being in power, maybe he's forced then to step back in the ring and wrestle more often or something of that nature in some way. Maybe the new person they put in power, GM or whatever, makes Triple H wrestle. Maybe he puts them in that situation so that Sting can interfere even more and really get under his skin.
Okay, I notice here you still have a talent contract.
Right. Are you listed on the Superstars page? You know, you're still a worker. You've decided you don't have to do it anymore, but now you do. So that could be a good way to get that him involved in that. All in all, great match. It delivered. And we got the match we expected as far as the conclusion of it, but we got there in a good and interesting way that we didn't see coming. That's what we love about good now, professional wrestling.
I know I was. At one point during that match, did you think, holy shit, the Authority might actually win this?
Absolutely. I absolutely thought that they could win. It kept me, I didn't know. It kept me on the edge of my seat. They booked it really, really well. They deserve a lot of credit for the way they put that match together. A lot of credit. It kept you interested and drawn in the entire time. My hat's off to them.
I agree. And we not just we, but a lot of people don't give WWE enough credit sometimes for the way they book a match, and that one was very well done.
Yeah.
With great talent that went above and beyond to put on a great show. So that was Survivor Series. They had hyped up a Vince McMahon reaction right after the pay-per-view
and
didn't do it.
Yeah.
And said nothing about why they didn't do it. They just decided, no, we're not gonna. All right, going into Raw tonight, leading up in 3 weeks, we got a quick turnaround for TLC. We know that Bray and Ambrose are going to be in a TLC match. It was announced last night during the pay-per-view as such. Anything else you think you see going on?
Rollins and Orton. I think Orton comes back tonight, and he gets into a program with Seth Rollins. We probably will see Cena and Big Show. He turned coat on the team, and now Big Show has no one to protect him because the Authority are out of power. But Cena was the one he knocked out. Unless they are going to convince Brock to come back and work a TLC match, Cena doesn't have anyone to fight. Who's the person that is most likely that he has beef with right now? It's going to be Show.
Mm-hmm.
We could see Harper and Rowan.
Yeah.
Rusev is going to have to fight somebody there because they need to keep him being active with Sheamus being out and gone. I mean, maybe him and Ziggler do a program if they get really creative with the booking around it. That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, everything's up in the air now. Obviously, after tonight, we'll get a better idea of what we have going forward. But I expect to see Randy Orton back tonight. I was shocked that he wasn't involved in the finish. I thought it would have been a great way to really drive home his babyface turn. But once again, I was waiting for it to happen. I was like, oh, there's gonna at some point Cole's gonna scream RK out of nowhere, and it's gonna happen here, and he's gonna help to put Team Cena over. And they didn't give it to me. I think it would have been a good storyline, but they didn't give it to me. I thought it was predictable. Another great thing they did.
We
should probably just really quickly recap our fantasy wrestling for this month.
Yes.
You probably want me to do this more than anything.
Yes, I do.
For those of you that know, Mike and I did our own fantasy wrestling league. There's two people in the league. It's Mike and myself. And over the last month, since the last pay-per-view, we picked teams of 10 superstars each, with a tag team counting as one superstar. And from week to week, we tabulated points for various things, including appearances on shows, promo time, wins via DQ or wins via pinfall or submission, all kinds of things. And as it came out, Mike won every week but the final week. And even though I came roaring back on the week and ended up winning and doing very well at the pay-per-view, Mike still beat me by a score of 1397 to 1180. So well over 200 points Mike beat me by. It was really academic.
Yeah.
By about halfway through the month that Mike was going to kick the shit out of me. So Mike, congratulations.
Thank you.
You picked wisely. I did not. You did a very good job, and I'm very proud of you. I always will be.
Oh, my God. He's proud of me.
I am. And so we're going to keep this going, and we picked new teams last night. Each of us held on to five of our superstars and put the rest of our five back into the pot, so to speak, and then drew again out of those guys. So do you have that in front of you right now, Mike,
yeah,
or no?
I do.
Go over your team?
Sure. I decided to hold on to Dolph Ziggler, Dean Ambrose, Randy Orton, Rusev, and Luke Harper. I then picked up Brock Lesnar that Kevin dropped. Cesaro, who I had before, but I dropped him and just decided to bring him back. Nikki Bella, The Usos, and Big Show.
Whereas I held on to John Cena, Seth Rollins, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, and Ryback, and picked up Golden Stardust, who was on Mike's team last month. I picked up Miz and Sandow, Bad News Barrett, Fandango, and Brie Bella.
You got two tag teams.
I did.
And it threw a little bit of a wrench into my plan because you picked Golden Stardust, then you picked Miz and Sandow, and forgot that you had picked Golden Stardust.
I know. I didn't forget I picked Golden Stardust.
Oh, you wanted just Mizdow.
I did. But
you forgot they had won the titles.
Right, exactly. So, I'm still happy with it, though, because I have a feeling that it's possible that we could see Miz and Sandow. Well, they have the titles right now, but it's possible I could see them split, and then I still have my tag team if I kept Sandow. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that we're still going to see TV time for Golden Stardust. So, I think I did a much better job picking my team this week. This month. I don't think I'm going to have to drop and pick people up every single week just to dig out of a hole like I did for the last month. But we'll see. Mike has already shown that he is better than me. I'm going to have to do my best.
I didn't drop or pick up anyone, did I?
No, you didn't have to.
Which is very strange for me, being how I play my fantasy football. I am such a tinkerer and play the waiver wire.
You're great, Mike. Is that what you want to hear? You're great.
Yeah,
you're the best.
There we go. That wasn't so hard. All right. So, moving on, we got a couple other segments that we want to do, a few more segments that we want to do, and we're at 41 minutes right now.
Oh, Jesus. Let's get we can always put off the big thing till next week that we talked about.
Really?
Yeah, we can.
Okay. All right. One fucking thing.
You want me to go first?
Yes.
All right. Anyone who's listened to this podcast could tell you that I am not a huge John Cena fan. I make a lot of comments that of the like of not wanting to see John Cena on the show. I think I've always also said I want John Cena to lose to everybody once or twice. And I just wanted to clarify something because I realized that's not really the way I feel. It just it makes, because of the way Cena is presented and in the way that the internet community and wrestling fans respond to him, it's just easy to say things that way. When in reality, I have a lot of, and not that John Cena or anyone really gives a shit about my opinion, but I still just want to clarify it. John Cena is an incredible asset to the WWE. He has worked tirelessly, as far as we know. He has worked hurt. He has been a brand ambassador, and he has done it as long as anyone in the history of that company. Something that should be applauded. His willingness to work with other people, the amazing things he does for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Once again, as I've never met the man, but from what people say, he's a wonderful human being and deserves the place that he has and has worked hard to get what he has in the WWE. My issue with John Cena comes simply as this. He is on, at this point, as good as he looks, he still looks young, he's still strong, he's still on the downside of his career to a certain degree. His character has become stale. It's in danger of becoming Hulk Hogan-level stale, like 92 Hulk Hogan, right? WrestleMania 9 Hulk Hogan. He's in danger of crossing that bridge. He doesn't want to turn heel, and I completely understand it for all the things that he does in his personal life. But if he's not going to refresh his character, if WWE Creative and him cannot get together to refresh his character in some small way, he really needs to start putting over other talent and using the celebrity, the fame, the talent he has to grow up that next generation of superstars, to put over the Bray Wyatts, to put over the Seth Rollinses, Luke Harpers, Cesaros, the people that are going to sustain this company going forward and give the fans new, fresh, and interesting things to watch on TV. Cena is always going to be a draw to a certain segment of the population, the younger crowd especially. So putting him even farther down the card in matches, like say with the Big Show going forward, if they went in that direction, is not a demotion, so to speak. It's rising up the mid-card to be more interesting to the casual viewer, which is a wonderful thing. Back in the Attitude Era, everyone had a storyline going. Even mid-card guys had a storyline going. He can be utilized in that way, and I think it would be better for him. I think it would be better for the WWE as a whole and for the fans. I don't want to see John Cena off television. He's still a valuable person to someone like myself who finds his antics to be a little over the top and finds him to be not very clever or funny on the mic. But he's still an asset, and he deserves the respect that he gets from that segment of the fan base. He deserves more respect from people like myself who want to run the guy down all the time. But if he chose to go in a different direction with his character, maybe tone down the merchandise, maybe change and put on some wrestling trunks, become a little more of a serious character, he could reinvent himself for the next 5 years and do wonderful work. Now, this is just for me. This is just for my style. This is just for what I watch the show for and an entertainment value. But that's my one fucking thing.
Good one. I have recently come to the conclusion that CM Punk's not coming back to wrestling anytime soon.
You just figured that out?
Yes.
Well, congratulations, Mike. Welcome to the fold.
It was recently announced that Punk was going to be writing an issue of Thor for Marvel Comics and may actually continue to do so with more writing for Marvel Comics, something that he's actually expressed interest in the past about doing because he is a very big comic book fan. And it seems to me that Punk is really enjoying life right now. He is not getting bumped around a ring, flying or driving from place to place every single day for over 300 days a year. His body is being rested. He's not hurting as much. He's married now to a gal who he probably really enjoys being around. Can you fault the guy for wanting to take as much time as he wants to do other things, things that really excite him? There seems to be a lot of fans that feel like he owes them something. And he put out a really great tweet a few days ago, kind of comparing what fans were saying to Barry Sanders, acting like because he retired early that fans thought that he owed them something for all of the time that they've spent in watching him and supporting him. The man wants to retire and not become a crippled mess in his later years of his life. More power to him. And I don't think that Punk owes any people anything. Yes, he does come across as a bit of a dick from time to time, and maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Maybe that's just the way he is in the public eye because he doesn't really care all that much. But the man certainly does not owe us, the wrestling fans, anything. Let the man live his life. If he wants to go on Talking Dead, host award shows, write comic books, go see hockey games or other sports attractions, do MMA instructional videos, if he's having fun doing it and enjoying his life like that, there's no reason to fault a guy for that. Punk, keep on doing what you're doing. I'd love to see you back in the ring, but if you're happy doing without wrestling, then don't wrestle.
That's brilliant, man. I couldn't agree with you more.
We we wanted to be a little positive today.
Absolutely.
So, we'll be slightly negative here with the next segment. We're going to induct a couple people into wrestling purgatory. We did this maybe 3-4 episodes ago and inducted Big E and Curtis Axel.
Correct.
Into it. Now, as we said when we first did this, wrestling purgatory is not forever. You can make your way out of it, and it seems as if Big E is with these promos for A New Day with Kofi and Xavier Woods. So there is still hope that you can always get out of this, so don't think that we're completely shitting on someone and putting them down the river. But my inductee into wrestling purgatory right now is Emma. Emma was, at one point, probably the number two women's wrestler on NXT behind Paige. When talking about the future of the Divas division, people were talking about Paige and Emma. Those two were putting on great matches and had great just chemistry with one another when working down in Florida. Emma gets brought up to the main roster and gets paired with Santino Marella immediately because she is a little quirky, a little weird, and they were kind of that odd couple going on there. But obviously her Jameis Winston incident where she walked out of a store with a cell phone cover or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Didn't sit very well. She was fired and rehired the same day. And ever since has been just feeder. Now, she was part of the winning team last night and put on some decent work, but there's no indication yet that anything significant is being sent Emma's way other than being really the jobber to your top-tier talent in the Divas division. So for that, I am putting Emma into wrestling purgatory. I hope you get out.
Well, one of the things you have to mention is really what wrestling purgatory is wrestlers that have no real direction,
yeah,
no real storyline, no consistent storyline or personality. And unfortunately, my inductee is Titus O'Neil. A month ago, we saw Titus O'Neil showing up on NXT, of all things, and fighting Sami Zayn. It was a good thing for NXT, someone like Sami Zayn, to be fighting someone from the main roster. It was a good thing just have someone from the main roster showing up on the show. We thought maybe that would lead into maybe a longer feud, maybe a stay over in NXT to work with some of the younger up-and-coming talent, but as quickly as it came, it was forgotten and gone. Sami Zayn is obviously in a nice feud for the NXT Championship with Neville. And Titus O'Neil is just not mentioned and is gone. All of a sudden, he's back on the main roster again, partnering up with Heath Slater and getting beaten up by a bunny. Titus O'Neil has had nothing really going for him since the primetime players. He's been touted at times from someone like JBL as being the toughest man or the strongest man in the company, and they still talk up how tough and big and strong he is, but they do that while he's laying on the mat being pinned by people in animal costumes. Titus O'Neil has a great look. He can talk on a microphone. He looks the part, but unfortunately they've done absolutely nothing with him. And right now, even with the feud with a bunny and Adam Rose, I still believe that Titus O'Neil is in wrestling purgatory.
Yeah.
Look to Big E, people.
Yeah.
What can happen for you?
Believe. Believe. All right. So we're gonna leave the main thing for next episode.
It's a teaser. We don't even know. You don't even know what it is.
Yeah. You don't know?
But you're fascinated. Yeah. You're fascinated about what we were going to talk about.
Tune in. We'll get into our top five. This is becoming a main staple of the show now, where we have a top five, and as always, this is our top five favorites, not necessarily what we believe are the all-time best by like any sort of statistics or anything like that. And this week's top five is top five debuts. And this is could be someone that came from another promotion or brand new person that got built up through some vignettes or anything like that. You want to start things off?
Sure. So I'm going to start off my top five debuts with a bittersweet one for me, which was Bret Hart in WCW. Unfortunately, they totally dropped the ball with Bret Hart's entire WCW career. But just seeing Bret come out on a WCW stage with the music that they picked for him and his video package playing, it was something very exciting. I remember watching wrestling in 1986 and seeing Hart and Neidhart wrestle. And even though they were the heels, they were the bad guys, and I was 5 or 6 years old, I still remember liking those guys a lot. For whatever reason it was.
Was this when they still had the blue and black tights?
It was like green, even at one point. Yeah, but yeah, they like a teal kind of thing they had going on. But I remember they fought in a main event kind of pay-per-view in a over-the-top battle royal, and they were the last two with Andre, and Andre eliminated them both. But there was something about Bret and, to a lesser extent, Neidhart that I just adored and was gravitated to. And when he got his big push and ended up becoming the main event star that he became in WWE, that was just incredible for me to see that guy rise up for the ranks. And when he went to go to WCW with all they did with Hogan and the NWO and all their successes, I couldn't wait to see this guy debut. And it was the worst possible thing. He had to wait a month after Survivor Series when he left the WWE. He debuted in that awful way where he came down to make sure that Sting didn't get screwed over, even though the count was perfectly fine. And he was that overbooked match at Starrcade with Sting and Hogan. But just in general, seeing Bret Hart in WCW was enough for me. That it was the best part probably of his entire run with WCW for me, but it was still exciting. Number two, and remember this is not in any particular order, just what I have down on my list, I'm going to say Sting last night at Survivor Series. He's a lot older. He doesn't look great. You can see in his wrestling gear that he's not in the best shape of his life, but how many 50-some-year-old guys are. But just seeing Sting in the WWE, I was reading an article earlier today that mentioned something I thought was brilliant, which is we will never see in wrestling, or maybe never is not the right word, but it'll be a long time before we'll see in wrestling that kind of thing where a guy would build his name up for so long at a different company and finally step onto that stage that he was known for not being a part of. There just isn't a secondary promotion with any kind of real notoriety to do that with. And with the way people move back and forth and the way that everything's so national now and global, guys are always going to move around. So Sting really is that last thing where you never thought this guy would actually show up, and he did. And his music was not something that we recognize. It wasn't his own WCW music, which I thought that was a shame. But still, just seeing him walk
especially
out.
Since for the video game promo, they used his right.
But you know them. The WWE always wants to use their own things. They slightly tweaked Goldberg's music, for crying out loud. I mean, but to sound exactly the same, but slightly tweaked. Bizarre. But who knows where this is going to go. It might end up being, you know, we hope that if it is Triple H and him, he can have a great match and go out on top and really have his WrestleMania moment. But just for a pure debut, I was very excited. The next one I have is Rey Mysterio coming to WWE. They ran a lot of great vignettes with his mask, all his different masks that he used over the years. And, you know, his coming out from the platform, being thrown up into the air, and just all the incredible work we saw Rey Mysterio do in the cruiserweight division, before he started having to get his ass kicked by Kevin Nash and Lex Luger and lose his mask and end up in the Filthy Animals and stuff. Ray was a highlight and a high spot working with Guerrero and Psicosis and Billy Kidman and those and the like. And to see him walk on to the main stage, something that he probably had always wanted to do, as a guy his size and at that point still in great shape and could really move and do things that no one else was doing, was just really exciting. And I love seeing that. The next one I have is the Radicals as a group showing up on Raw. Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. This is the foundation of the great wrestling that WCW had, and for those guys to all walk out together and show up, this is another bittersweet one. As a group, they never really did much. Of course, Benoit and Guerrero would end up being world champions. Dean Malenko quickly moved to some pretty shitty gimmicks and ended up in the back of the backstage area, putting on and becoming a booking agent, which was great. And Perry Saturn ended up falling in love with a mop. But in the debut, it was a great thing to see guys who just never got their due get a chance to be on the big stage. And because of that, we ended up having incredible matches with Benoit and Guerrero, and their entire careers really becoming validated by getting the kind of push that they deserved. And the last one is another one from when I was younger, or actually the first one from when I was younger, but I was mentioning Bret Hart earlier, was Ric Flair debuting in WWF at that point with the big gold belt. I remember my dad, I didn't watch NWA, WCW when I was younger. I always watched WWF. And I would see some matches here or there. I knew who Dusty Rhodes was. I knew who Ric Flair was, but I didn't watch it on a regular basis. But my dad always talked about Ric Flair and how cool Ric Flair was. And I knew who he was. I knew him from sight, but I'd never really seen him wrestle. And I remember reading a book about Hulk Hogan. This is 89 or something like that, where it's talking about how WCW and WWF will allow these two titans to get in the ring and settle who's the greatest wrestler one day. I don't know who published the book or whatever, but I remember thinking, oh, that would be so cool if those two guys could wrestle. And to see Flair on WWF TV with his financial consultant, I think Bobby the Brain Heenan, mm-hmm. talking about the real world's champion, and Flair was still young and vibrant and could give a promo like nobody's business and could work like crazy in a ring. And, of course, we never got the match. We never got Hogan and Flair in any meaningful way in the WWF, and that was a big shame, but we did get... It's not fair to Flair. We did get one of the greatest Royal Rumbles.
It was on a sign last night.
Yeah, yeah. And we got one of the best Royal Rumbles ever off of that, and a great performance. And his stay was short, but he put on some amazing matches with Randy Savage. And that was just one of those things where you just never thought you'd see it. And we did. And even looking back at it, you're kind of bizarre that guy jumped over and still had the belt and could really... Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that happening even in the mid to late 90s? With world champion coming over to a different promotion and them not milking that for every dollar?
Yeah.
It's baffling. But Ric Flair was my last of my top five.
It was reasons like that why the Montreal Screwjob happened.
Right.
Because Vince was scared to death that Bret was going to take the belt with him.
Right.
And in all honesty, Ric Flair had the right to hold on to that belt because he wasn't given his
deposit back.
Yeah. Which, that's crazy that happened.
It was a different world.
You got to give us 25 grand to be the world champ. Like, ooh. Also, Heenan didn't really work out as Flair's financial advisor very well with all the money issues that Flair ran into later in life.
We can blame it all on Heenan, the weasel.
All right, so my top five are actually 100% completely different from yours.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with Rick Rude re-debuting in WCW on the same day that he was also on Raw. Because Raw was pre-taped, and he was scheduled to be on Raw, but was not under contract. His contract had lapsed, and he was working on a handshake agreement with WWF as part of DX, kind of just sitting in the back there, and then showed back up on WCW TV, right as he's on TV with WWF. I didn't know what to think about this, because I was one of those people that kind of flipped between shows, and like, how is this happening? And my dad's like, one of these isn't live. One of these is taped. Like,
your dad's smart,
shit.
Man.
I never knew that at that time Raw was being taped.
Right.
I just thought Raw was always live. I was a fan of Rick Rude, and I hated seeing him being in this managerial position. There was a big injury to his back in a match with Sting that caused him to have to retire, but I know he was planning a comeback before his untimely death. I thought that was one of the craziest debuts for a wrestler to be on two TV shows at the same time and pretty much jumping ship and saying, hey, those idiots that are taped over there didn't know I was leaving. Next, staying with WCW, Scott Hall. Just showing up on Nitro one night, having no clue what he was doing there, because to me, he's Razor Ramon. He's a WWE guy. Why is he showing up on WCW? He's talking really aggressive, like he's coming to take things over. And then eventually Nash came into play and had that nice build up to, excuse me, Bash at the Beach with the ultimate formation of the NWO. But did not see that coming with Hall just showing up on television. It was a huge surprise, and I mean, for me also, pre-internet era, for me personally, I think the internet was around, but I didn't utilize it.
Can I say this? I talked about the fact that we may never see a Sting, something like Sting again. We'll never see anything like that again, because the amount of information that's available, the fact that we know these guys have contracts and when the contracts end, and the fact that we have so much backstage information and this, we'll never be blindsided like that again.
We can get some surprises.
To that level?
Maybe not to that level. And I'll bring up an instance where recently this has occurred with one of my later debuts, because it has to do with that person. Next is Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, his debut on NXT. I was a huge fan. I still am a huge fan of Bryan. And when he left the Indies, signed with the WWE, went to developmental, didn't stay in developmental for very long before this concept of this TV show NXT came about, where these rookies were paired up with veterans and competing for a six-figure contract and a future world title shot. I was like, yes, Bryan Danielson is gonna win this. And I just looked forward the very first week. He was in a match with Chris Jericho, and it was an awesome match between the two. I think I brought this up when we talked about submission holds. Jericho actually did the lion tamer to Daniel, and something that he doesn't do very often. So expectations were high, and then he was made to look like the weakest link of the show. But things have paid off in the long run, sort of. He built himself back up after being fired for a little bit of time because he choked Justin Roberts with a tie, and toy companies thought that was bad, and won the world title in great fashion at WrestleMania 30. Now is on the shelf with an injury, but he'll be back. I was so psyched to see Bryan on there. Fourthly, CM Punk. Again, I was a fan of his on the indie circuit and knew that he was in the WWE system. And then when they relaunched ECW, started building up the debut of CM Punk, keeping his name, doing his thing, and that he's going to debut at the Hammerstein Ballroom for a taping of ECW television. I was so psyched for that and really happy to see him finally hit the stage. And we all know what eventually happened to him. Led a great career in WWE and now is just doing his thing, as I said earlier. But my favorite debut of all time was Chris Jericho coming to the WWE. A lot of hype built up around who's this guy that's going to be debuting, what's this countdown. We kind of knew who it was going to be, but it still was a great appearance for him coming out and interrupting The Rock. And Jericho, what I was going to say earlier, Jericho's surprise appearance in the Rumble about 2-3 years ago was almost completely by surprise. I didn't see anyone report that Jericho was going to be there and in there. When he came out number two to Ziggler's number one, I freaking jumped out of my chair. Was like, holy shit, he's here. So they can still pull it off, but it's very difficult to pull off a surprise like that. And I know they tried to do it with Sting. They flew Sting in through Kansas City yesterday, and then he took, I guess, limo.
There's reports that they leaked that on purpose.
Oh, really?
They weren't really trying to hide it all that much because they wanted people to
tune in,
put eyes on it, and see that anything can happen, kind of thing. Mm. But the thing with Jericho, you have to understand, it's not a guy jumping from one promotion to another. It's a guy with his own personal life that they can do that with. With Scott Hall, it was. Now we know that Brock Lesnar's contract is up a certain time. We know when Kurt Angle's contract is up. We knew that Sting's contract was up this year. So the fact that you have a guy moving from one promotion to another, it's just there's so much information out there. Can it happen? Yes, but to that extent. And also the fact that back then, even older fans, even adults, had a different view of one promotion to another.
Yeah.
You know, and for us as younger fans, like, we really thought there might be a war going on between the two. We didn't know that this, you know, there was a possibility that they were sent by Vince McMahon to take over WCW. Yeah. Because you have the WWE is a traded stock, because they have a film company behind them. You know, it just that era of that kind of wrestling is done. For the most part.
I agree. But those are our top five favorite debuts. Where are we at? An hour and 11 minutes.
That sounds perfect to me.
Yeah. So Raw is going to be starting here in an hour. We're going to be definitely watching that.
Who's going to be the new authority figure? You got it? Or is there going to be a new authority figure?
I think there will be. I don't know if it'll necessarily be tonight, be a right-away thing.
Are we going to see Vince?
I think Vince will be on, yeah.
Are we going to see Triple H and Stephanie?
Yes. At least in some fashion. Maybe trying to plead their case to Cena. be awesome if they're, like, outside of the building, like, and Cena's coming in. John, can we talk? Hey, well, you're looking good tonight.
Well, remember the stipulation. They are not fired from their jobs. They are still, you know, they still work in finance and all this stuff in the company. They still have jobs, which means that they're still allowed to be around anytime they want to be. They just have no power to make matches or control anything about the talent. Mm-hmm. So that gives them the ability to be around all the time and to do stuff like that, which was a good way of doing it, I think. It allows the storyline to have some legs to it and can go a little more into depth on that, and we can see Stephanie McMahon grovel, which I think a lot of fans will enjoy seeing, and see Triple H humbled, which is going to be a good thing, because Triple H isn't a very humble guy in his on-screen persona, and I don't think he ever really has been. You know?
Yeah.
Even when he was a baby face, he was a baby face that hit people in the head with sledgehammers. I remember.
And invaded homes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember when Triple H turned baby face coming back from that quad injury, like he would still do like his like intense choke. Like he'd get a guy down in the corner and like just physically choke him. And I was like, aren't you supposed to be a baby face now? Is that what we're doing? I mean, he didn't do it with a tie, so it was fine.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't choke with a tie. With your hand is fine.
Exactly.
You can smash someone's head with a cinder block. Fine. Don't choke someone with a tie.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, with that, we're going to be watching Raw. I'm going to be live tweeting along with it, so if you want to join in on the conversation, you can follow... Well, actually, by the time I get this out, it might be either during the show or you're probably not going to listen to this during the show. But we're on Twitter, at Miss Spots. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. Our website is MissSpotsPodcast.com. And most importantly, you can get us on iTunes. That is the best place to find this podcast besides the website. You can subscribe to us right there in iTunes so you can get the new episodes automatically downloaded to your computer, your phone, your other type of device that you like to use, tablet or whatnot. And if you have a moment of your time, if you can rate and review the site, the podcast, it really helps us get up in the rankings there and be able to get more and more people involved. Until next time, guys, enjoy the next couple of weeks of wrestling, and we'll see you then.